Are you trying to find the perfect distribution platform to get your music on Spotify and Apple? I personally use and love DistroKid. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/DistroKid to get a small discount and get access to a platform with unlimited uploads for a yearly fee. Happy uploading and enjoy the show.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
One, two, three.
Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I am your host, DK, and with me, as always, is Lovable Lou.
Ooh, CLB. Certified Lou Boy.
All right.
All right.
No, that was a good Drake reference there.
I mean, I'll give the people one, but I don't know any others.
So I think that this is going to... I'm going to change the topic on you, actually. We were talking about what this episode is going to be about. And as we kind of like brainstorm and talk about right before we start talking, right? Because most of this stuff is on the fly. It's not scripted. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But on this one, we were going to talk about something else. We're going to save that for the next episode. Someone on our Discord pointed out, hey, Lou has said some history as a rock producer. I know DK has had some history recording some live instruments and some bands. Let's talk about that. Now, the one thing I don't have experience in, and I think you may have a little bit more or a lot more, significantly more, is metal music.
Yeah.
And which I know is a very tight mixing community. Like there's a whole community behind that and a culture behind that, that I'm not involved in at all.
Yeah.
Excuse me, but I can appreciate that stuff. So, Lou, you want to talk about what it was like recording, producing, mixing rock music?
Yeah, sure. I mean, honestly, it was very fun. It's a lot of different personalities, just like you would find in any other genre. If funny enough, like your clients could literally be a band of just four people, five people that kind of know each other. And this may be their first album, or you've got four or five people who are part of a bigger, you know, name. But the funny thing is, it's not just them in the studio. They bring out session players all the time. You're talking about like a side of the recording where they're either recording themselves all the demos from home on a simple little setup. So like they're sending you songs to mix that are either programmed drums or something, or they're hiring you to go to the studio for a couple days. They got to track 10 songs worth of live drums. They got to record live guitars, reamp the guitars because the tone wasn't right. You know, there's a bunch of different things that go into it, but it's very different from like your usual hip hop or pop sessions.
Yeah. In hip hop pop sessions, a lot of the songwriting is done during the session, but with bands, they're usually already written. They've maybe even performed them on stage already. They've at least practiced it.
Yep.
As far as my experience has gone, and it's a lot of fun. Like in that sense, it's truly a different experience when it's less creative and more technical.
That's where I think the great divide between some engineers and producer styles and thoughts on like tools in the industry really differ. Because when you actually eliminate the need to create on the spot, a lot of times you're just looking for the best possible capture. And that's where the recording styles differ. That's why you see so many different techniques for recording an acoustic guitar, or drums, the 10 different ways to mic for the best snare sound and this and that. Because being that everything's already rehearsed, everybody knows what they're coming in for. Everything's organized. You set a day for like laying down the rough takes so that everybody can overdub over that and have some reference with each other so it still feels live. There's so much planning that goes into it that a lot of times you don't really find like in a typical hip hop session that I've been in, whether it be like trap or whatever, they're coming up with the lyrics on the spot. So they're just looking for somebody who can hit record, do a million takes. Cause if that's what it takes to write a song, that's what it takes. And sometimes the end result is, well, hey, that was the song. Like we wrote it on spot. Like we're not going to overdub the vocals for a better take. But whatever came out is whatever came out.
And I think that both have benefits. For example, when you're there in the writing creative process, I feel like it's easier to become friends with the people. And it's like you're definitely part of the creative process. But yeah, when you're recording a band, it is much smoother. And you get to really, truly practice being an engineer again.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you're helping writing his songs, a lot of the times you're not thinking too much about, especially if it's just a vocal. I mean, you're not thinking too much about mic position and overthinking that. And so it is a different experience as far as the recording end and client interaction. Now, as far as mixing, now, this is a different skill. Like a lot of people, especially in the hip hop realm, are used to mixing 808s and synthetic drums. But what happens when all of a sudden every snare hit is slightly quieter or louder than the one past? You know,
the tone is slightly pitched up or down.
There's room noise. Like now you're dealing with different stuff. Instruments.
Yeah. Or you have the entire band performing with each other in one shot.
There you go. So let's talk about this real quick. What is your favorite drum miking kind of setups that you've done for recording drums?
You know, I've never been an in-between guy, but I've totally been a minimalist and a maximus, if that's even a thing.
A maximist.
If you're a drummer who can impress me with just kick, snare, and a floor tom, hi-hat, ride, and maybe a few extras, but like if you can get me with to just fall in love with you with just kick, snare, and floor tom, like, I would love recording you any day, all day long for free. I don't care. But then you got the regular kits. Like, there's drum kits where they have a few more toms, so you got to play a little more with the miking. You got to make sure that you get, you know, each one of the toms to fit nicely in, even in the stereo image of the overheads. It doesn't really wow me as far as the process. I'm calculating a little more. But then you got guys that show up with, like, 13 toms for some reason. You're like, actually, this looks like a lot of fun to record. Like, now this is a puzzle. Like, you got the amazing drummer who's super minimalist, doesn't need everything, so we don't have to mic it up if he's only gonna hit it once. But then you got the middle guy, which usually still great but not super impressive of a setup or exciting as a drummer sometimes. But then you got these guys who have like a million things. They may only hit it once, but the process of miking it up was just fun.
So what are your favorite like overhead techniques?
I like XY. The reason being is that you get a lot tighter with the snare imaging in the center. But space pair, if I'm actually trying...
XY is the...
Yeah, so basically XY, you put the two microphones, whether they be pencil condensers or large diaphragm condensers, typically. Sometimes you'll see ribbons, but ribbons are a whole other thing. That's technically another technique. But
at 45 degree angles across each other. So
exactly.
You're
so you get a whole X.
And you put it over the snare drum? Or you put it over the kick drum?
I actually put it right in between the kick and snare. I want to actually get
it. So there's still a little bit of an angle.
There's still, yeah, exactly. Because then I'm going to actually position the angle of it to be where the floor tom is on one side, almost. If not entirely, because you still want to capture, you don't want to completely miss the rest of the drum kit, but you have to admit, there is already a hi-hat mic, usually in most cases with me. So I'm not necessarily trying to capture the hi-hat on the other side, I'm trying to capture more of the floor tom and the ride, so I'm not too worried about where it's actually pointing back for the rest of the drums.
Yeah.
But because of that, you get a better center image. Space pair, if you're trying to actually minimize the amount of snare in your overheads, too. Like, depending what kind of style you want to go for, if you're going for, like, a tight rock punk kind of sound, you could just go for a space pair, because then there's less issue with trying to get the snare to be loud and tight and to cut through the mix, because it's not bleeding through the overheads. So you're not trying to actually take away from the frequency content to compensate. But if you do XY, you can actually get a very in-your-face, more metal sound, because that snare is really going to shine through. When you compress the overheads, it's going to explode out of the mix. If you have a room mic involved with the overheads and everything, you can really get it to explode. But that's kind of the thing. Like, a lot of metal drums, a lot of rock drummers, they really like those big, boomy, slapping sounds.
Yeah, and as well as, like, you were talking about the room sound. I know that within heavier genres of the rock world, oftentimes the room that you record the drums in is very important.
Yeah.
And like the reverb and like the space that the drums are in make the drums sound huge.
Yep. And depending on every style of genre that you do, depends on what kind of room you want, whether you want a darker room, a brighter room, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting because like, with trap music, everything's just kind of so dry and really minimalist.
Yeah.
But even just where you record them is a big deal when it comes to live recording, especially something as with so much nuance as a drum kit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could say the same thing for vocals. Where if you were to record in a booth that's
it sounds
heavily
like you're,
brick or
yeah,
something.
Yeah. Yo, it sounds like you're sitting in a 2x2 box. Like,
yeah, yeah. So, like, that's why the whole idea behind big live rooms is so nice, because there's so little early reflections playing a factor in what you're capturing, that you get a much, much cleaner sounding vocal that you feel just a little more alive with. Mm-hmm. Drums, put them in a small room, just like vocals, they get boxy, they sound pretty bad. But get a nice large room, really do your best at capturing
really large
sound.
Ceilings, high ceilings.
Yep.
High ceilings do wonders for drums.
And there's a lot of people who will choose the room based on its material, whether it's wood, brick, concrete.
There you go.
If there's curtains available or not. You'll see a lot of times, like for people who want tighter sounding drums, they'll actually go into a large room, but they'll still surround the drum set with baffles behind it so that it actually kind of pushes a little more energy towards it and it sounds a little drier.
So as far as drums, I think that the advice that we can give is to experiment a lot, whether you have your own space or not, or if you're going to the same place, especially if you're going to something different, somewhere different every time. It's a good idea to experiment a lot. There is no right way. And honestly, when you try these different things out, you're going to find that some drum tones were more your favorite. Some, like I had the same room for 4 or 5 years in Utah. Mm-hmm. And in the same room, it took me like a while, but I found my favorite spot to record drums in one corner facing a specific direction, one part of the room. And then I moved the cloud and all of a sudden I liked it there a lot. You know, so there was, I moved the drums around a lot, and that's a good experiment to try as well.
Yeah. But that's something that's lost in most modern production, or at least what's popular on the radio right now.
Yeah.
You don't really have to figure out where the snare is in the room. You don't really have to worry about phase flipping
your
snare top and bottom.
Maybe there's something about the psychology of choice, where you have too many options, it kind of just leads to more stress and...
And
people tend to be more
less,
happy when there's less decisions to make. And
not
like
only that, but
choices.
They can focus on more of like, all right, what's the quality of the few choices?
Yeah.
Like, where
so I don't have to worry about where I don't have to worry about which room the drums are in. Like, that.
Like, I like the snare for whenever I record drums. I like the snare with this mic. It sounds really punchy. But then changing the snare tone is just as simply as, oh, I want it to be less punchy. Move it back a little bit.
So let's talk a little bit about amps as well. I know this is going to be surprising to most people, but when recording guitars, electric guitars, it sounds better. Well, traditionally, the way that electric guitar is recorded is miking the amp. A lot of people aren't quite sure how to record guitar. So they just they've been plugging in their guitar directly into their interface, into their computer. That's not how you traditionally record guitar. Traditionally, it's miking, putting a microphone in front of your amplifier. Do you want to talk about some techniques about distance and how the different sounds are when you put the mic closer to the center of the woofer versus the edge of the woofer versus distance typical microphones used for recording guitar amps?
Sure. I mean, typical is always going to be like between a dynamic and a ribbon. You see a lot of condensers thrown around, and that's fine, but it's just not as typical as seeing a dynamic or a ribbon mic.
Specifically the 57. Yeah, Shure 57.
Shure 57 has always been an industry staple. It's really good for that mid-range. It filters out a lot of the lows already naturally, so there's not a lot of gunk buildup in your recording for guitars. And then on the ribbon side, typically like a Rohr R121 or a Beyer Dynamic M... what is it?
161?
M60?
Oh, M60, yeah.
Or 160, I forget what it is. But, you know, those combinations alone, like one will actually get the grit, which would be the 57. And depending where you put the 57, here is the spacing on the speaker. If you're on the outer edge, you'll notice that a lot of your top end filters out and all you're left with is around like 300 to 4, maybe 500 hertz, just rumbling out. And that's all you're recording. But if you move the microphone straight to the center, where the middle of the dust cap is, it's just all highs. It's really aggressive. There's a lot of 3K shooting at you. You can actually move that mic in between. You can angle it around. So like if you put it right in the middle, you should find a sweet spot in every amp. Every amp has a certain tone. Like a Mesa Boogie dual rectifier does not sound like a Fender Twin Reverb by a long shot. So the miking technique is going to be different depending on the overall tone you're looking for, because with an acoustic, with a clean guitar, you might want it to be a little bit brighter, because a lot of these amps have a lot of body to clean tones, especially like tube amps. So maybe you move it a little bit closer to the center. But with like metal music, which has screeching highs coming out, lots of distortion and everything, you might move it actually more to the edge to get a darker tone, so it's not in the way of the vocals.
Yes. You know? Point being, like, making it intentional. There's a mic stand out there in the world. I forgot what it's called. But
the automatic one?
Yeah, it's like motorized, so you can change the position on the amp without having to go back and forth.
Yep,
usually
and you
that's
can control it from your iPad.
Yeah. So usually that's kind of like the first responsibility of the classic rock studio musician or the intern.
Yeah, that was the intern. Put on the headphones and just listen to talkback. Further back. Further forward, left.
Moving it forward.
Nope, go right. No, I said right.
And I think that that's like a really good way to practice as well. It's like experimenting with different tones.
One of my favorite learning methods for that was actually if you look at my old Facebook, you will find a picture that I still hold very proudly of. I remember when I was very proud to own a 57, a 609, a Telefunken M80. And the Audio-Technica 57 copy, because I was like, oh yeah, all these are going to be the perfect mics for guitar tones, this and that. But the way I learned was really just realizing, like, holy shit, just moving the mic makes a bigger difference than changing the mic half the time when it comes to recording guitars.
Yeah. I mean, there's not so much frequencies. There's no so many frequencies coming out of a single woofer as like a human voice or...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so... It's a lot more precise.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make sense. What else with rock music? Bass cabs versus DI.
Oh, so this is kind of funny.
Because in rock and guitar, you typically, electric guitar, you typically record the amp, but, and sometimes DI. Mm-hmm. I mean, that 80s funky picking tone.
I mean, especially if, you,
if
you're looking to reamp later.
Yeah,
if
which is a whole other topic.
You, yeah.
We won't even go into reamping. We're not trying to confuse people yet, but yeah. But that's a whole business and a whole side of the business as well. Let's talk about, but with bass, sometimes you DI, and sometimes you do external DIs, like the Ready tube DI, or like we have a couple here, the... what is it called?
Radio Pro DIs.
Yeah, the radial DIs. Or you can just go directly DI into, or high Z input into the interface. Mm-hmm. And then also some people still choose to mic the cap.
Oh, yeah.
The amp. So tell us a little bit about that and the difference between the two.
So it's kind of funny. With bass, you typically find that the DI gets used more. And more nowadays. Back then, the DI was actually used to just capture in case they needed to reamp the bass cab, just like guitars. Because with bass, like really depending on the amp, it might fit in the track, it might not. And late back in the day, you couldn't just change plugins. You literally had to like, oh, you know what? I really don't like the way this amp sounds in the mix. Like, do we have the DI? Can we send it right back through the amp?
So that's what reamping is.
Yeah, but the DI is the safety net of that. So anytime you record guitars or bass, absolutely, especially bass, keep the DI if you do plan on doing that in the future. But nowadays, you'll see that they'll still mic up a bass cab, but the bass cabs actually have like XLR line outputs. So you'll do two kind of DIs. You'll do one that's like the actual bass itself in case you want to change overall amp tones. You can actually capture directly from the head of the bass because a lot of people really like the sound of what the head's doing on the preamp section. And they don't necessarily want to do it.
Line out.
Exactly. But so this is especially
there's no speaker
useful.
In the head.
No, but it's especially useful for people who want an amp tone but can't turn up the amp at their apartment or something.
Oh, there you go.
So this is where that feature really shined, especially
do
in live venues.
Do guitars have that?
Guitars, some do. I know there's some Fender, there's some Line 6 that have this ability.
But that's mostly a bass thing. I mean, that's pretty common
that's
bass.
That's almost normal in bass amp heads to have a DI out.
Yeah.
And you can choose whether it's pre or post processing.
Oh.
So you, I mean, you see that on plugins too. Ground lifts built in, you have pads dip built in and everything. Like it's a full DI on these heads you see nowadays. But the cool thing about it is that you literally have a safety net for live sound now, because bass isn't typically mic'd up in live concerts. It's typically DI. So in the recording studio, when people bring out their bass amps, they brought them out for a very specific tone. So that's why it's important to get your DI with it, because in the event that they actually wish they changed their setting or something, they can always bring it back in a reamp session. But yeah, you'll find people blending an actual mic'd up amp cab with the DI of the bass more often than you'll ever see that in guitars.
And yeah, I mean, in the studio now, regardless of genre, going more into the pop world, for example, Law in Outdonesia, Law is a... Law just goes DI most of the time. And if you have an emulation, a plug-in emulation, dope. But you can change those afterwards now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
and
really
a lot
convenient.
Of times, like, I don't. To
yeah,
be honest.
Yeah, sometimes the DI signal's dope.
Yeah. Especially for Law. He's got his bass that sounds amazing already.
Except for upright bass.
Oh, yeah.
If upright you can avoid bass, doing DI for upright bass at any point.
You actually got to mic that up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those ones are tough to do, too, because...
But they're actually... So they are and they aren't, because it's that dual-spaced mic kind of thing where you want to do the overall capture, which especially now matters what
without dividers and in a small room. Yeah,
exactly.
You're like, playing right next to the drummer. Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, good luck. But then like you put a like nice ribbon mic down low, something that captures really the natural body of that instrument, you get some pretty amazing recordings.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, cool. I think that kind of covers the major band stuff.
Keyboards are keyboards. I'm sorry, guys. Like, nobody mics up a keyboard amp, so I'm just saying. Unless they're running through a guitar amp, at which point, you know.
And part of it is, and I think just briefly to touch on it, I was in a funk band and we recorded a lot of ourselves. I think the number one rule for recording horns of any kind, there's two pieces of advice here. One, air is the best mixer. You don't have to put, if you have a room and the whole band's not playing at the same time, and you're recording either a section at a time, the brass section, or just one horn at a time or whatever, air is a great mixer. Like, put that microphone away from the horn. Let it kind of, like, capture the space around it rather than the air coming directly out of that instrument. Whether it's a trumpet, a saxophone, a flute, whatever, just give it some space. Second thing, specifically with trumpet and trombone, like horns and that and saxophone, typical brass section there. If you're going to double a trumpet or double a trombone, double a saxophone, it's the same player, same instrument, have them move into different areas of the room. Leave the mic in the same spot. Have them do one where they step slightly to the left. Have them do another take where they step slightly to the right, a little bit behind. If you record doubles or multiple parts in the same spot, in the same direction of the mic, you'll come across a lot of weird phasing.
Yep.
And comb filtering there. So
that's the same thing for guitars.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For distorted guitars.
So tell us about that then. So like you just put the mic in a different spot, or you
have
to change?
If you think about it, there's some people just do one mic, some people will do two. But if you think about what distortion is, like it's going to be a blur of mid frequencies. So either you swap guitars or you try to play with the tone a little bit. But usually when you layer guitars with the same guitar, it just becomes a blur. It doesn't actually sound any better all the time. But if you swap like from, let's say, a Schecter humbucker setup guitar, whatever,
to a Strat,
yeah, it's gonna be too wild of a difference. But if you were to do like Schecter to like an Ibanez, you know, there's enough of a difference in a similar style to where the doubled guitar really sounds like a different guitar, which is the goal. But that's specific to rock. You know, you typically want to hear different guitar tones for different section guitars. Like, you'll notice that the tone shifts per layer.
Or a different amp.
Yeah, like the distancing and everything. Different. Yeah. And honestly, same thing. If you want the guitar amp to sound like more of a real amp, don't worry about the EQ plugin. Just pull the microphone back. Same thing like DK said. Air is the best mixer because creating distance in your mix in this genre of music actually means, because of so many live instruments, the distance the microphone is at is actually relative to the distance it sounds like it's in the mix. So if you wanted your guitars to sound far away, maybe pull that microphone back, and that's all you got to do. Don't add reverb.
Lastly, recording the entire band live versus recording parts at a time.
Or overdubs, which is the best hybrid of the two.
Yeah. Overdubs is great, where you record the in that sense, overdubs is defining that is recording the entire section live, the entire band live, but then redoing specific parts, and if everything's isolated correctly, that will work well.
Yeah.
So like for example,
if not, it's literally just at that point a blueprint for the rest of the recording for everybody else.
So one of the things that I did in my old studio is that I had a little port, a little connector for in my vocal booth for guitar cables. So I would leave the amp in the vocal booth, but I would leave the guitarist outside of the vocal booth with the drummer in the studio room. And so that way they could look at each other and I can get that blaring tone, but there'd be no bleed. So if we needed to overdo the drums, it wouldn't affect the guitar track, because sometimes you get too much bleed where then overdubs becomes a lot more difficult. With when there's a lot of bleed, overdub is more of the issue than the actual like EQ. With the blending, I would say that a lot of people try to get rid of all the bleed completely and think it's a horrible thing. I think that a more experienced mixer will tell you that if you can use the bleed to your advantage, I think there's different, sometimes it just sucks. But oftentimes, it's not always a bad thing, and you can use it to your advantage.
Yeah, honestly speaking, I've always been a fan of the hybrid way, which is you plan on the overdubs.
So tell me about this.
You still record live. You get everybody set up if you have a couple days of recording booked out. So like some bands would book me for like 3 days straight, and we'd go to like either a rehearsal studio or a recording studio, depending on the band's budget. Basically, we would set up the drums, leave them in that spot for the next couple days. Set up the guitar amp wherever it sounds good, leave it in that spot for the next couple days. The first recording would just be the band together all as one and get their best possible take, because not every band plays to a click, funny enough, when you're doing live recording. But once you've got the take, you now have the stems and the ability to mute people back out of a section, so that you can have them overdub their section back in to get clean, you know, pristine takes. But you're not really worried about having to pack up at the end of the day. That's usually possible if you have multiple days reserved back to back with no interruptions in between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Like with these rock sessions, usually we'll leave the drums up and everything set up for a few days. They're not a couple hours at a time for a quick vocal in and out. It's usually like a full day thing.
Yeah.
And that's the case. Like usually day rates work better.
Yeah, it's usually 12-hour days that you'll find. Like people will come in at 10 in the morning to set up the drums and everything. Then you got to mic it up, double check it, tune the drums, make sure they're ready. You're recording drums by like 2 o'clock sometimes.
Cool.
Yeah, you know what I mean, so 4 hours later, there goes a third of your session just on setup.
Oh, last thing. This is not necessarily rock, but I think it's a good segue into just acoustic instruments. Strings, solos versus sections.
Yeah.
So whether it's a little chamber section of a few people or an entire orchestra pit, strings wildly sound different when they're close mic'd versus further mic'd.
Yes.
The top end completely is different. When the strings are far away and you record, like, even if it's a small chamber of like six person string section, you may consider doing a close mic on each of the instruments, but you definitely want to consider at least one or two different room or overhead mm-hmm. options, like somehow capturing the overall vibe of everyone at the same time, instead of just the close mics. The close mics are a lot more grainy. You can really hear the bow on the string, and it's a lot more screechy, the top end of the stringed instrument. But an orchestra really feels like an orchestra when it's that mid-range. Not that top mm-hmm. end screech, yep. it's that mid-range.
Yep.
And same thing for doubles in this section. Usually doubles with string instruments, because they don't have frets on them, they can't perfectly be in tune. There's a lot less, overdub, like phasings type stuff. Mm-hmm. So feel free to double and stack as much as you want. But in the top end of stuff, again, also, if you're going to hire anybody, you got to hire string players, like good string yeah. players. Dang, well, I mean, you got to hire everything. But good string players and being able to play in tune for a solo, like, don't ask your cousin, don't ask your sister, ask like a pro. Mm-hmm. Like, that goes a long way. Unless your cousin or your sister is a pro.
I mean,
ask your typical Japanese Asian protege violin player.
I was going to say, typically, I don't know anyone that has a professional sibling that does that, so. Now there that you mention it, damn. Like, maybe I got to hit you up for, like, your family members.
Nobody in my family plays violin, though. Yeah, we're the only Japanese family in the block that doesn't play strings, doesn't play violin.
Play guitar that has strings
Yo,
on.
I literally, I went to a Japanese church in Utah, and that was funny because every single child in that church played violin. Like, every single time there was like a special musical number and it was like a kids program or something like that, everybody's kids would be playing the violin with that one cello player. But everybody played violin. Yeah, that was just funny. Anyway.
Yeah, the cello player is smart. I'm just saying. Yeah, it stands out.
There you go. We all need good cello players or bass players in this world. but yeah, I think it's a good time to take a quick break and pause and say thank you to our sponsor. We love iZotope, and iZotope is an amazing company that sells great plugins. They have two options. You can buy the plugins outright, or you can get all of their plugins at once for a monthly subscription fee. And you can get your first month free for the subscription free or 10% off of your next iZotope order by going to iZotope.com/MMPodcast. Once again, that's iZotope.com/MMPodcast. Yeah. Other than that, like as far as like the rock stuff about recording acoustic instruments, microphone choice and all that stuff starts to matter a little bit more. Mm-hmm. All the technical side of engineering seems to matter a lot more when you're recording more than just vocals. So I would recommend, even if you're like a hip hop producer that's mostly recording vocals, it's good experience to get your hands onto more complex, like rock sections. I think that rock engineers and producers should work on hip hop sometimes and out of their genre. And I think that the opposite, I think some hip hop people should do some rock music and some folk music.
Well, let's thank Young Thug because, looks like he's making punk popular again.
Yeah, well, him and Machine Gun Kelly.
And Travis Barker.
Yeah, Travis Barker's huge right now. Swago. Shout out to Swago.
Yeah.
Swago on our beat. All right. We love Swago. And on that note, we really appreciate everybody that stopped by. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to us on YouTube. If you're on Apple, please rate us 5 stars. That really helps us a lot. As always, you can hit us up on Instagram, at DK Mixes.
At Mastered by Lou.
There you go. And that's new. Yeah. At Mastered by Lou. And yeah, we have free resources. If you can go to mixingmusicpodcast.com, there's a bunch of free resources, PDFs that you can download, free plugins that you can get. A lot of good stuff. And as always, like if you share the podcast, we really appreciate that as well. On that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
1, 2, 3.
Hey, what up? It's DK. Thank you so much for listening to the Mixing Music Podcast. I just want to do a quick plug. Did you know that I write kids' books? If you have children, nieces, nephews, I have books that are totally available for free or $10 on Amazon for physical copies. You can go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/kidsbooks to get access and learn more about that. Thank you for all of your support. Now let's get back to the show.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.